Welcome to the Jerusalem Post podcast. I'm Yaakov Katz and joined by Lahav Harkov. And Lahav, we just finished a long day at the Jerusalem Post 10th annual conference. We're still sitting in the Museum of Tolerance recording this. And before we jump into what happened at the conference, there was big news today that came out of this whole race to head the Jewish Agency. Why don't you give us the update on what's going on with that? Because we've been writing a bit about it.
Well, we'll take us back to Sunday when Elazar Stern, who many thought was the leading candidate because he was the candidate backed by the government. And just to sort of put a pin on that, the government, their candidate has always won, except for in the last election when Isaac Herzog won the election, even though Yuval Steinitz was Netanyahu's favorite candidate. So based on historically, Stern seemed to be the one that would win. Anyway, on Sunday, he gave an interview in which they were talking about how the new head of the Shin Bet, whose name is Ronen Bar, but at the time, people were just calling him R because his name was censored, how there were anonymous complaints about him that came out about 2 days before his appointment was going to be authorized. We didn't actually know the nature of the complaints, but the insinuations in the reports were that it was sexual harassment or things like that. So Stern was asked about them, and he said something along the lines that he shredded reports that he got about officers in the IDF, anonymous reports that he received about officers in the IDF, because he was the head of manpower. So he was like the HR general of the IDF.
Right. So he said that he shredded these anonymous complaints, and he came out and basically slammed this whole culture of anonymous complaints. He claimed afterwards that he wasn't referring specifically to sexual natured complaints, but that was while the public basically understood and interpreted what he had said.
Right. And he has a bit of a history of saying things that could be seen as inappropriate.
Of putting his foot in his mouth also.
Right. But there's a specific example, which a lot of people brought up after this, that he once said to Likud Knesset member Miri Regev, who was the military censor and the military spokeswoman like about 15 years ago. He once said to her from the stage of the Knesset, "We all know how you got promoted in the army," which, while he said later that he didn't mean anything sexual, everyone assumed that's what she meant. So this is just seemed like a very similar situation, except that now he's in this sensitive position where he's running for chairman of the Jewish Agency.
Right. So he made that comment and basically tried to stick with it, tried to stay in the race. But today, Tuesday, had to pull out and withdrew his candidacy and said that it had become something that was overly politicized. He felt that that it was a witch hunt. That was how he put it to be. But in the end, he decided that for the better of the Jewish Agency, and for, I guess, maybe for his political career, which might have been in jeopardy already, he decided that he needed to withdraw his candidacy, which kind of throws things back up in the air. And I wonder, Lahav, do you think that the backlash of all of this is going to be that a woman is going to be appointed to the role? We know that there's a bunch of women who are candidates also. Michal Cutler-Wunsch, a former member of Knesset for Blue and White. Flor Hassan Nachum, deputy mayor of Jerusalem, Omer Yankelevich, the former diaspora affairs minister, and Irena Nevzlin, I almost forgot one, who is the wife of Yuli Edelstein, but that's not why she is a candidate. She's a candidate because she is also the head of the Anu Museum in Tel Aviv and the Jewish World Museum. She recently wrote a book about Israeli diaspora ties, so also very qualified. Do you think that's what's going to happen?
There's definitely a lot of talk about, like, saying that the time has come for a woman to head the Jewish Agency, and it's a storied history. It has never had a woman head. None of those candidates, I have to say, I think are very strong, each for different reasons. Nevzlin, her father, Leonid Nevzlin, is, let's say,
has some issues with Putin.
Yes, an enemy of Russian President Vladimir Putin, and a large chunk, perhaps even the majority of the Jewish Agency's work these days is in Russia. So that would be difficult for them. And the others, I don't think, have strong enough name recognition, really.
But this could be a compromise at the end.
Right. This could be a big push for them. And they are strong candidates. I mean, and Irena Nevzlin herself also has strong qualifications. It's just a different political issue with her.
Right. I thought it was interesting is that her husband, Yuli Edelstein, who's the health minister, announced suddenly on Monday evening that he's going to be running against Netanyahu or whenever there are going to be primaries for the leadership of Likud. Now, there are no primaries on the horizon. It's not as if it's something that's so urgent. So why now announce that? And the only explanation that I could come up with, and I don't know, but it's just my guess, is that he's trying to help his wife in her race to lead the Jewish agency, so that the selection committee, these are 10 members who basically have to vote, will say, oh, wait, we're not only appointing a new chairman person, we're also might be appointing the wife of a future Israeli prime minister.
Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if the nepotism is an advantage in this situation. You know, Edelstein is turning himself into a more politically controversial figure now, and it would be a risk. Like, if that's the logic, then it's a risky logic, I think.
Anything's possible in Israeli politics.
For sure. And it'll be a very interesting race in Likud, because if Edelstein versus Netanyahu, I think Netanyahu will win. But if Netanyahu doesn't end up running or whatever, or somehow things become very open, there are so many people who want to take that throne.
Right. So let's just jump back to the conference. We had a packed day. We had the Prime Minister of Israel, the President of Israel, the former head of the Mossad, the former Secretary of State to the United States. We had Minister of Defense Benny Gantz, Interior Minister Ayelet Shaked, and top members of Israel's business community and tech sector, Jewish diaspora relations, lots of people. What's the big takeaway from your part?
Well, first of all, as always, we have a very good turnout of interesting politicians and senior figures in the business world at the Jerusalem Post conference. But to me, I thought the most interesting headline was Gideon Saar, the justice minister, saying that the government that he and Prime Minister Naftali Bennett strongly oppose opening a consulate to the Palestinians in Jerusalem. I don't remember Bennett actually saying it like himself and being quoted. It's more like, you know, sources close to Bennett. And not him in a public sphere saying it. And so this is coming very close. Saar might even be the most senior person. I think even though, you know, Bennett has made it apparent to everyone that he does oppose it, I think the reason he hasn't gotten up on a stage and said it is because he doesn't want to have a public fight with the Biden administration on this, just like he said he doesn't want to have public disagreements on Iran, even though they clearly disagree. But on the other hand, there is an advantage to having it out in the open, even if it's in a way that's not overly sort of argumentative. You know, the government needs to make its position clear.
This is what I told 2 years ago. Netanyahu won't be able to form a government. And we saw it during four campaigns. I don't think it is going to change.
It's interesting. Saar spoke shortly before, I think, Yair Lapid began his meetings in Washington, D.C. He's in Washington, D.C. today. He's meeting with Kamala Harris, the vice president. He's supposed to meet with Blinken, the secretary of state. I think with Jake Sullivan, right? The national security advisor, and Pelosi, the speaker of the House. I would assume that Lapid is also going there to try to convince them to walk away from that. I mean, it's known that this could potentially bring down the coalition. It could bring back Netanyahu in a future election. That's something that the Biden administration clearly does not necessarily want. So do you think Lapid is also bringing that message to Washington?
I know that the top item on his agenda is still Iran. We're still in this weird limbo period where Iran won't agree to come back to the negotiating table to return to the Iran deal. They say they will. They won't say when. But I'm sure that this will be on the agenda, because up until now, basically, the Biden administration had agreed to wait until the budget passed, because the budget was seen, you know, if there's a budget, then that'll be the point at which this coalition is more stable. And that is fast approaching. It's in about a month. And so it'll probably come up. And yeah, I mean, it could be a huge destabilizing factor, because the right-wing parties in the coalition see this as an issue of Israel's sovereignty in Jerusalem.
Right. I thought also was very interesting. We're both the interviews on stage, and we're going to play these for you with Yossi Cohen, the former head of the Mossad, and Mike Pompeo, the former secretary of state, both talking about Iran, both talking about how fast approaching it is towards a potential nuclear weapon, and how ultimately, and they both kind of hinted at this, is that if push comes to shove, Israel might in the end have to take action, right? Pompeo says it very clearly. This is the price of appeasement. And Yossi Cohen was asked plainly by our colleague Yonah Bob, does Israel have the capability? And he said that, again, that, you know, we did it in 1981, we did it in 2007, and Israel might need to do it again.
Yeah, although it's interesting that both him and the head of intelligence in the IDF have said recently that Iran is not as close to a nuclear weapon as some other statements we've heard recently would make us seem.
I think that Iran, till today, does not even close to acquire military, nuclear, or any nuclear weapons whatsoever. Not closer than it was in the past.
The reason they're saying that is because there's sort of two different measures, and I think people don't necessarily realize that Iran is close to enriching enough uranium for a bomb, but there are other components of the bomb other than uranium that Iran doesn't have yet. So people get a little confused about those different headlines of, you know, Iran is 6 months away or Iran is not very close.
Right. And the other thing that I thought was very interesting in today's interview is you heard from a lot of the politicians, right? Even Ayala Chaked, who's known for being on the right flank and is being courted by members of Likud. And you have Avigdor Lieberman, who used to be kind of like the pyromaniac of Israeli coalitions to an extent. And maybe that's not the right description, but he was always burning stuff and always, not no to this, no to that, making trouble. Everyone's talking nice and everyone's like, we want this coalition to last. We want this government to last. They got the budget coming in a few weeks. Politically speaking, things look pretty good, no?
I mean, they have to do that, right? They've all, well, Lieberman already took this gamble 2 years ago, but Bennett, Shaked, Saar, they've all taken this gamble that they can work with the left rather than working with Netanyahu. And so they have to make everything look like it's really, really great to try to convince people.
In the end, I believe that the public will know how to appreciate politicians that are working for them and not just shouting against others.
At the end of the day, the glue that is sticking this government together is the fact that they don't want Netanyahu to come back. And so they're putting all their other interests aside. And they're almost like a caretaker government or a technocratic government. They're Lieberman aside, most of them are not doing very dramatic things. They're just trying to sort of stabilize the country after 2 years of a political crisis. I say Lieberman aside because I think he's making some big steps when it comes to regulation and taxes and things like that.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting. So for this week's Jerusalem Post podcast, a special edition from the Jerusalem Post conference. And we now have interviews. I did one on stage with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Yonah Bob, our colleague with Israel's former head of the Mossad, in his first post-Mossad interview in English. He did one for a TV show, which got him into some trouble with some comments that he made. But his first appearance with the Jerusalem Post, here we go.
Yossi, thank you so much for coming here. For anybody who doesn't know, this is his first interview in English, only his second interview. And only 4 months out, that means there are current operations happening right now that Yossi gave an order to. You don't have to respond to that. I don't want to be killed and nobody else here wants to hear something that you'd have to kill us for. Iran. So there are a couple of things that happened in Iran in the last year or so. There were three different nuclear facilities that happened to explode or be hit by a bolt of lightning or something. There was this guy, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the chief nuclear scientist, who was killed by some sort of science fiction remote control gun. There is also that nuclear archive heist thing that also happened. All of these things, the Iranians and foreign sources say that this happened from the Mossad. On the other hand, Prime Minister Bennett, Defense Minister Benny Gantz say, we are worse off now with Iran than we've ever been before. They're up to 60% your enrichment with uranium. So what is your legacy at this point?
Well, thank you very much for having me here. I mean, that's a great opportunity to celebrate Jerusalem Post for this very important event. Strange things are happening in Iran that you've reported that I cannot make or have any comments to. But nevertheless, to the actual things that are happening in Iran today, I have a different view. I think that in the end of the day, Iran, till today, 2021, does not even close to acquire military, nuclear, or any nuclear weapons whatsoever. Not closer than it was in the past. And this is because of long-lasting efforts that were done by some forces around the world. And I believe that this kind of an statement that Iran is better off today than it was in the past, to my knowledge, based on the intelligence I read a few months ago, that was the last time I did, I've lost my license reading intelligence, is not true. I think that the Iranian facilities are less capable of doing things as they did in the past. I think that they have less capabilities entirely as they had in the past. I think that they have less intentions, not less intentions, but less foreign support to what they're doing less than they had in the past. And there is one, I believe, very important message that I'd like to deliver. Maybe this opportunity is probably the right one to deliver. I want to exercise two things with you. One is, in the end of the day, Israel, like we said always, will have to defend itself by itself. And if worse comes to worse, and Iran eventually will take the wrong turn towards a military bomb, Israel will have to act.
Do we have the capability to do that when we don't have bunker buster bombs?
I think that we'll have to develop capabilities to allow us to be absolutely independent, doing what Israel has done twice, unfortunately, before in Iraq and in Syria. We all remember 81 and Deir ez-Zor in Syria, I mean Iraq and Syria, both nuclear sites that were taken away. I think that they should not sleep quietly in Iran knowing that we have or not having this kind of capabilities. But I definitely believe that we have to develop that, and this is one a very important remark. I think the second remark is that if regaining power at what we call the path to the JCPOA, to renew the JCPOA that was signed and then eventually President Trump exited from the JCPOA some time ago, 2018, after the archive was brought into their intention too, I would say that the agreement or the nuclear deal, as often we called it, has to be eventually completely refurnished, completely, but not only in one different subject. It has to be completely refurnished and completely done.
If it isn't, would we have to act?
If it hasn't been taking the direction that I believe should be the right thing to do, I believe that Iran will keep on having their capabilities as they have them today to enrich, even high level of enrichment, like 60% today, maybe higher sometime in the future. I think that all these letters that present the nuclear deal, like JCPOA, C stands for comprehensive. The agreement is not comprehensive. It has to be comprehensive. Comprehensive means that Iran does not have the ability to develop itself to the level of a threshold nation. And this is where they want to go to. Under and with the agreement of the powers, this is something that the state of Israel could not accept.
Last Iran question. The IAEA itself has said that they are blind, that their cameras are gone. How worried do we need to be that some of that 60% uranium is being hidden right now? A former defense minister and IDF chief said that it's easier to hide that than anything else.
I think that the IAEA, as I often refer to what Mr. Grossi has to do, is as the supreme court of the world's nuclear capabilities. He has to be today very tough, and he can be very tough since. And I can refer to the Prime Minister's last speech at the UNGA, United Nations General Assembly, just a few weeks ago. And he said, these three sites, Turquzabad, Marivan, Tehran, all these sites that we've learned about from
2018.
From the archive. It was mentioned there. We didn't know about these sites before. I think that Mr. Grossi should take these under consideration when allowing the nations to sign eventually or not signing the future JCPOA. Unless Iran comes completely clean about their deeds in the past and today, a new agreement should not be signed, and he, Grossi, General Secretary of the IAEA, should not allow that.
Moving into politics, you are a little bit more public these days. What do you think of the current government? Do you think they'll last the full 4 years?
I don't know. I think Ayelet Shaked have just answered this question.
Okay. There seem to be some people in the Likud who are worried about you running for Prime Minister of the Likud at some point in 2024 when there's the cooling off period. They seem to be leaking some stories in the papers recently. Would you run for the leadership of the Likud or a different party?
I don't really know what they're worried about, but you better ask them. I mean, I'm not in politics.
What about?
I'm in business today. I'm sure that you've...
SoftBank Israel.
SoftBank Israel.
But in 2024?
SoftBank Israel will be greater.
Okay. You've been to the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Sudan, all of these countries. Do you think the Saudis will normalize ties with Israel, and when?
Well, first, I believe that we're celebrating the Abraham Accords. And yesterday, I mean, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, was here receiving a kind of an honor ceremony celebrating his doings, and together with this Trump administration and Ambassador Friedman and others. I think that was one of the greatest diplomatic moves on the Middle East ever. I think it is vitally important to our existence, not only referring to all these directors that we hear, CEOs of international companies and local companies, to strengthen our economy. It helps pushing the evils away and working with the good guys, working with the good states. I hope that this wave will continue. Signing peace treaties with four nations simultaneously, or very close to simultaneously, was for me a majestic thing. It was not less than a miracle or a beautiful move for us Israelis in the Middle East. So I definitely hope, I pray, that this move will continue. It's not modern not to be in good relations with the State of Israel any longer. If you're not part of it, something probably is wrong with you or the other threats that are not allowing you to be in touch with us. Modern nations have to be in touch with the State of Israel today. That's why we're so innovative. Thank you. That's why we believe that we have to bring all the smartest people around the globe working for or with us, shoulder to shoulder, on our technologies. And I truly believe that the light from the State of Israel reaches everybody. And it is known by all nations that there is a lot of gain, not only to us, but mutual interest could be completed if we are in good relations with the others and then with us.
I'd love to stay up here all day. 30 seconds. Rona Raj, should the Prime Minister have revealed it, the Mossad operation, or not revealed it?
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here with
you. Thank you, Yossi Cohen.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was former head of the Mossad, Yossi Cohen, in an interview with the Jerusalem Post's Yonah Bob. And now for the interview that I did with former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo at the Jerusalem Post conference.
So it was great to have you. I'm curious, you know, Yossi Cohen, who was on stage, and you guys overlapped a bit back when you were at CIA and then also as Secretary of State, spoke about how the Iranian nuclear threat, yes, of course, it's dire, it's very severe, but it's not around the corner. It's not about to happen. Everything that some people have been saying, that it's all failed, and the Trump pullout and withdrawal from the JCPOA, that whole idea did not work out. Did it in the end? I mean, they're pursuing, they still have more enriched uranium. But on the other hand, are we in a better place? Are we in a worse place?
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt that the policies that we adopted made Israel, the United States, and the world safer from the Iranian regime. I am as certain of that as I am sitting with you here today, Yaakov. We denied them resources. In the end, nuclear weapons program take a handful of things, one of which is the capacity to do the work, the scientific knowledge, the infrastructure that goes with it, all of the money it takes to build out a nuclear weapons program. The JCPOA, this nuclear deal, was nuts. It guaranteed a pathway for the Iranians to ultimately develop a nuclear weapon. You need only take a look at a handful of the documents that a great, wonderful Israeli mission conducted outside of Tehran that shows the Iranian intent to continue to build out its nuclear weapons program. We denied them the capacity to build out their Shia militias in Iraq. We denied them resources. Hezbollah soldiers were making a fraction of the pay that they were making when the Trump administration came into office. We had denied them the ability to build out a Gulf-threatening capability. And, you know, this administration says they want to re-enter the deal longer, better, stronger. Godspeed. I wanted longer, I wanted better, and I wanted much, much stronger. And I am convinced, had we had another 12 months or 24 months, that together the United States and Israel would have been able to deliver on that.
Do you think that we'll find ourselves in a place that military action is the last resort? That's what Israel's done it in 2007, did it in 1981. Can Israel do it again?
This is the risk of appeasement. The risk of appeasement is you embolden your adversaries, and ultimately they put nations in the place where they're stuck with only one tool, a military tool. This is not in the best interest of anyone. I pray that we do not force Israel into a really difficult decision one day. But I pray even more than that. I pray that if it is the case that something like that has to happen, if the world must deny the Iranians a nuclear weapon, that the United States will be part of making sure that that happens. We were intent on it. We were prepared to do it. The strike on Qasem Soleimani demonstrated our willingness to defend American interests around the world. And I'm confident that the work that we were engaged in would have prevented Iran from getting a nuclear weapon in a way that I hope doesn't have to end up resorting to a military option.
So if I'm reading between the lines, had you remained in office and the negotiations did not work, is it possible that we would have seen military action on behalf of the Trump administration?
I think you've just laid out a hypothetical on top of a hypothetical.
Okay.
But make no mistake about it. You only need to go to President Trump's Twitter account. We were never going to let Iran get a nuclear weapon on our watch.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, just a few steps from here, is the annex, I think it's called, of the Jerusalem, of the U.S. Embassy in Jerusalem, what's on Agron Street, the embassy that's part of the embassy.
I'm very familiar with it,
and then yes. There's the other embassy. I think you know these buildings probably better than most people. There's talk now of opening a consulate in Jerusalem that would serve or represent the Palestinian people. Your thoughts on that?
It's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea for the United States. It's a terrible idea for Israel, and it's a bad idea for the Palestinian people as well. Two other thoughts. It's illegal under U.S. law. We just, as a rule, when we recognize nations, we have an embassy. We don't place a consulate in the same city. Just it's a rule that we have. Most nations have the same rule. But second, the message that this would send to the Palestinian leaders who continue to oppress their own people is really bad. We want good things for the Palestinian people. Right? We do. But here's what we don't want. We don't want to mislead them into thinking that the United States is somehow neutral between a country like Israel, a democracy like Israel, and an oppressive kleptocratic regime like the regime that's running the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank today.
So talking about the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, is Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, is he a partner for peace? Right now, this government in Jerusalem led by Naftali Bennett's not talking to him, really.
Yeah.
Is he a partner?
No, of course not.
That's,
I don't know what else to say.
So
well, I pray.
How can that change?
As a Christian, I pray that it will change, that he will see a way clear to understand that it's in the best interest of his people to engage in a conversation with Israel. But he's all about no. And he's all about no because it's deeply self-interested for him. And I've spent a fair amount of time with him. I always urged him to have the conversation. The only way you get to resolution of this conflict is through dialogue and conversation. It's going to be very fraught and very difficult, and there are some incredibly complex, difficult issues. But you can't resolve them by urging your people to threaten intifada when things don't go your way. And you can see the Abraham Accords are a demonstrable path forward that every people in this region can choose. Israel is a nation of peace. We're in Jerusalem. For goodness sakes.
Right.
This is a nation of peace. The Palestinian people can have better lives as well. The Israelis that I spoke to and the leadership were perfectly prepared to do everything they could to make sure they had better lives as well. You simply can't have a set of leaders that are so deeply connected to a corrupt regime and who have no interest in creating this peace.
Two last short questions. Number one is, you had that visit, I think it was to the city of Nome in Saudi Arabia. Prime Minister Netanyahu, I think Yossi Cohen was there. You were there, apparently. This is according to reports. What was that meeting like? And how close were we to normalizing ties with the Saudis?
So you are a great interviewer. I can neither confirm nor deny anyone's presence in Nome that evening. The second question I can actually address. I am convinced that there will be multiple nations who come to see that it is the appropriate thing to do to recognize Israel as the rightful Jewish homeland and the state of Israel as a partner in peace and stability and prosperity. I don't know when the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia will make that decision. It does take American leadership. America had, we weren't, these were agreements between sovereign nations, but America's role in this was central. That we weren't guarantors for the agreement, but our good offices were very beneficial to helping these leaders get to the place where they could make the brave and bold decisions that they did to recognize Israel. We did it not once, not twice, but four times in the course of 120 days. And I am convinced that not only the people of Israel, the people of each of those nations can see the benefits that are flowing to them already from a security and prosperity standpoint, and that these will stand the test of history and the world will be better for it.
And just finally, Secretary, Jerusalem, as you know, is an ancient city which has made history through millennia. It's a place where announcements are sometimes made. And I'm just curious if this is, there's no better stage than right now to tell us your plans for the coming years, where we might see you in 2024.
I am happy to talk about my plans. I am going to continue the fight for freedom all across the world.
Secretary Pompeo, it's great to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bless you. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Jerusalem Post podcast, our special edition from this week's Jerusalem Post Diplomatic Conference. We'll be back next week, as always. If you enjoyed the podcast, please share it on social media. It's available on all major podcast platforms.